From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. It has been 2 years since nations agreed upon a modest framework to address climate change in Paris at the COP21 United Nations climate meeting. Now, at COP23 in Bonn, Germany, Donald Trump's withdrawal from the Paris Accord appears to not have deterred the rest of the world. The last two holdouts to the Paris Accord, Syria and Nicaragua, have decided to sign the deal, leaving the U.S. the only country in the entire world to not be on board. Thousands of country delegates, staff, activists, and organizers are in Bonn at the climate meeting that is being jointly hosted by Germany and the island nation of Fiji. The COP23 meeting comes at the same time as the U.S. federal government released its latest National Climate Assessment report, which clearly indicates that climate change is human-made and in full swing, and directly contradicts the Trump administration's position. My guest is Kali Akuno. He is a co-founder and co-director of Cooperation Jackson. He formerly served as the director of special projects and external funding in the mayoral administration of the late Chokwe Lumumba of Jackson, Mississippi, where he supported cooperative development, the introduction of eco-friendly and carbon reduction methods of operation, and the promotion of human rights and international relations for the city. He was formerly the co-director of the U.S. Human Rights Network and the executive director of the People's Hurricane Relief Fund based in New Orleans, Louisiana, after Hurricane Katrina. He now joins us from Bonn, Germany, where he's part of the U.S. People's Delegation at the COP23. Welcome to the program, Kali.
Thank you for having me.
So first, what is the goal of COP23? 2 years after the Paris Accord, an accord that many felt was simply not strong enough, more symbolic than actually practical. What is the UN and what are country delegates setting out for themselves to accomplish at Bonn? First, we'll talk about the delegates, then you can tell me about what activists like yourself are setting out to accomplish.
Well, I'm part of the delegation that you mentioned, It Takes Roots. And that is a combination of three alliances, the Indigenous Environmental Network, the Coalition the Grassroots Global Justice Alliance and the Coalition for Climate Justice Alliance. So we're all here really pushing five fundamental things from our perspective. And just in the interest of time, I'll try to be brief on a couple of what those points basically are. So number one is really here to really strengthen the framework that we advanced in Paris in particular 2 years ago. And I think that can best be summarized by making an argument to keep it in the ground. And if we're going to do anything close towards attaining the 1.5 degree goal, there's got to be some major reductions and some reductions now, and it has to be reductions at the source. And so all of this talk that you hear, Jerry Brown and some others, promoting these false solutions around cap and trade and paying for carbon emissions and assuming that other countries, particularly in the rainforest regions of the world, are going to be able to absorb all of this with different types of offsets. These kind of false solutions, we're continuing to raise arguments around. And then the second point is us really bringing the solutions that our organizations and communities are developing, the real concrete solutions that are being promoted, being developed, being advanced, that draw on our traditional knowledges, that draw on the traditions of struggle within our community. That's another thing that we're really here trying to promote. Another thing, just to go quickly, is just recovery, particularly given what just happened in Puerto Rico, Houston, and the other parts of the Caribbean islands. And then another critical piece is to continue to deepen our relationships and allies with international partners, struggling on the same principles and for the promotion of human rights within the framework, which is something I hope we can get to that's being denied and has been denied with part of the Paris Accord. So these are some of the fundamental things that we're working towards.
So I think the issue of how the U.S. itself is struggling from the impacts of climate change is such an important aspect. We've had one of the worst hurricane seasons in recent history in the U.S. The California wildfires have been fueled by climate change, many agree. Right. And at the same time, the U.S.'s own national climate assessment has been released, showing so clearly how, you know, because this is a report that has to be based on science and you can't really fake science too much. And so it's showing very clearly how the climate is changing. And you have, at the same time, the U.S. being the only country to not even sign on to the very modest and inadequate Paris Accord. All of these contradictions, how are they being viewed in Bonn? Are people feeling that the Trump administration's withdrawal from the Paris Accord is hindering the world in addressing climate change? Or are they saying, doesn't matter, we can go on without the U.S.?
It's a bit of both, actually. It's not stopping folks from trying to advance some solutions, clearly. And in many respects, I think many of us would argue that the United States and the Trump administration not being here to a certain degree has opened up actually more space. It's eliminated some of the blocks that the United States has traditionally registered.
Right, even under the Obama administration and other liberal administrations. Right. You've seen a lot of hindering. Yeah.
That's right. So it's opened up a little bit more room, but the presence or the absence, I should say, of the United States is sorely missing, and it's one that has to be addressed because the United States government, in particular, and corporations based in the United States that operate throughout the world, constitute the largest emitters of deadly gases in the world, and so them not being here and not making commitments and not being accountable to the global community. Still raises some critical concerns that we have to find some way to address. So I think one positive thing that you're hearing a little bit more this go around than you heard, say, in COP21, is there some beginning to be some conversation around how do you actually create some enforcement mechanisms and some accountability that's beginning to kind of seep into the conversation from the bits I've heard so far. And I keep in mind, we're only 2 days into the official proceedings of the COP. So all of the little small little things that you hear that you might like could very well be scratched out of the text at the final say at the end of next week. But there's at least beginning to be that conversation. And I think it's part of that middle space of folks trying to force the United States to live up to really its obligations to everybody on the planet, being the largest emitter, but also trying to deal with the right orientation and the climate denial orientation of the Trump administration and how dangerous that is, not only to folks in the United States, but to everybody on the planet.
Now, Carly, you mentioned Jerry Brown. He's the California governor. Unfortunately, he speaks out of both sides of his mouth, sees himself as a climate champion, and then pushes fracking, promotes cap and trade, which, while it might be seen as one prong of a multi-pronged approach, unfortunately, he seems to have put all of his eggs into that basket. He very prominently became an advisor to something called the Under 2 Coalition. He's as a governor of the largest, most populous state in the U.S., it seems to be taking on this sort of leadership role in the vacuum of the U.S., but you are critical of that role that he's playing.
Very critical of that role he's playing. Now, me personally, I think what he's doing is not only promoting false solutions, I think it's a dangerous distortion of where the movement needs to be going right now, where the conversation needs to be headed. Because it's not a conversation about real practical solutions. It's a conversation that's actually going to allow the United States government and the worst emitters, the petrochemical companies, to basically continue doing what they're doing, continue doing it at the rate in which they've been doing it, if not accelerating it, and just saying that, by supporting RED and supporting these carbon offsets, that they're actually achieving some goal in some magical made-up world in their imaginations, that they're making some contribution towards ending climate change, when in effect what they're doing is a massive land grab. It's displacing indigenous people, you know, out of their communal homelands. And this is the rhetoric of a climate champion. So it's exasperating, you know, migration, which is going to be a part of the displacement that comes with the implementation of these programs, particularly as, you know, the climate disasters continue to kind of accelerate and the pace pickens up. So it's really a dangerous game, I think, that Jerry Brown is playing. And I think we need to hold him accountable to that and not get sucked into this kind of narrative that he's providing an alternative to Trump. He's engaging the process as it currently stands. But what he's offering and what he's providing as a solution is very dangerous. And I think we need to approach it in that way and be very clear about presenting what the real solutions are, you know, and what the just transition framework is, which is counter to what Jerry Brown is promoting.
How important is Fiji's co-hosting of this conference? Fiji is one of many island nations around the world who are the most vulnerable countries to rising sea levels and have taken in many ways the lead in these climate talks. A lot of the island nations are also, of course, part of the global south and have been among those countries pushing for a just adaptation to a just transition and also some kind of reparations from the wealthier nations who've caused the problems in the first place. Does Fiji's name on the, you know, as one of the co-hosts alongside Germany go a long way toward addressing what people have pointed out as a discrepancy between wealthy nations and poorer nations taking the lead?
I wish I could say yes. I wish I could say yes.
I knew the answer would be more complicated.
in all due respect, I think the different nations of Oceania are definitely raising a lot of the critical issues that have to be raised. But, you know, this is still a game of real politics. And in that game, those nations combined don't hold much economic weight. They don't hold much political weight. And they definitely don't hold much military weight. And so how much they can actually impact the actual proceedings and the process and its outcomes is very limited. And I think that is something that we have to be mindful of, particularly those of us in the social movement who are looking for avenues and openings to collaborate with the various nation states to advance the agenda and to push for real solutions. We kind of got to recognize the real imbalance that actually exists within the world system. And be clear about what they can do and what they can argue for and what the limits of that is. And in that respect, you know, from what I can see, and there's a lot that we never see of what happens behind closed doors. They're doing some pushing, but even that is very limited because one of the ways I think oftentimes some of the nations, particularly those from the global south, who kind of get foisted into these roles in some respects. It's often a way of actually nullifying some of their more vocal or at least public criticism of the process because they have to kind of serve as like a neutral arbitrator and bring everybody together and build some consensus, which often prohibits you from speaking some fundamental truths. And I think part of that is at play clearly on display here. But we know that there's other folks who are raising and have to raise some serious issues because their communities are literally disappearing as we speak. So that can't be ignored. Where folks are going to have to relocate and what kind of reparations and restitution and plans are going to be put in place for the relocation are now serious issues that I think they speak to directly from their experience in a way that few people on the earth can right now. But we know more folks and more communities are definitely going to be facing that type of crisis in the United States and well beyond in the near future.
Kali, this is not the first COP meeting you've been to, right?
No.
How can you emphasize to our audience the role that grassroots forces have played at all the COP meetings? Because at most of these meetings, you've got the internal discussions, then you've got the external push from outside, from grassroots organizations, people from all over the world who sort of mingle and exchange ideas, and you know, from Europe, from the Global South, from the US like yourself, from Africa, from Australia, from South America, and they come and they have often been pushing hard to get the idea of climate justice into the proceedings. How important has that been, in your opinion, as a force that has been the most constructive force in these national meetings, without which we might not have even the very, very modest progress that we have?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. I mean, I think, being honest, it's a history. It's an uneven history. I think there's been time when the social movement has been played a front and center role in shaping the discussions and guiding the discussions, and at times, I think, redirecting them in some very critical and fundamental ways. I think Copenhagen was one. Some people don't share that view, but I think that was one wherein the proceedings were definitely stalled, and the contradictions between the richer nations and the poorer nations, the Global South, and the OECD countries in particular, was made very apparent and very clear. That led to the kind of the urgency that was built up for COP21 in Paris, where I think we were all, you know, got a taste of this is it, kind of, you know, we're either going to make it and break it, we're going to save the planet, or are we going to fail? And why there was such a dire need, particularly from the UN and from the nation states, to come out with some type of agreement, whether it had enforcement mechanisms or not. And then there were a lot of social movement actors and a lot of folks from civil society who are also touting that narrative. And that's where I think it can be mixed, you know, because was it something that's actually going to concretely deal with the issues? In terms of the agreement that came out, I would have to argue, in a lot of fundamental respects, no. But we in this case, being the social movements and civil society, played a role in kind of reinforcing some aspect of this narrative that a solution is in place, when in fact there's a lot more that has to be done for us to come anywhere close to staying below 2 degrees Celsius of climate change or temperature change, temperature rising. And at the current rate, you know, we could be looking at 4, right? If not worse. And so sometimes we have a role to play, and I'm saying we in a very broad sense, we played a role of reinforcing narratives that I don't think are actually helpful or solutions to the problem. And I think that's where delegations like ours, we've tried to remain consistent over the years of bringing a clear message around keeping it in the ground, 1.5, that our communities have the solutions, the direct solutions to the problem. So I think that is our particular role in this struggle, coming from a more left-oriented perspective. But, you know, the range of what constitutes the social movement is very, very broad.
Right.
And I think that's something that people need to be aware of, that unfortunately we're not at a place right now where we all agree on what needs to happen, and we have to find some way, I think, of closing that gap, because the stakes are real, and the threat is clearly upon us right now, as you all witness and experience in California with, you know, the fires, and we witness with this hurricane season, which by all indications, all of this is only going to intensify. We haven't seen the worst of it yet.
Well, Kali, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll certainly be keeping our eye on the talks from here in the U.S., even if the U.S. media isn't covering it very much. Thanks so much, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
My guest has been Kali Akuno, co-founder and co-director of Cooperation Jackson, joining us from Bonn, Germany, where he is attending the COP23 UN climate talks. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.